It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. So in Buddhism, as we know, there is the one and the many. We've heard this a trillion times. And to the one, called the self, there's an unconscious tendency to cling, which is a big mistake, actually. And in today's Kanchi, Dogen presents the other half, the interconnected self, our Zazen self. And then tells us how to avoid clinging to our individual self, a job we must, with great care, continuously attend to. In Genjo Koan, Dogen writes the following. When a fish swims, no matter how far it swims, it doesn't reach the end of the water. When a bird flies, no matter how high it flies, it cannot reach the end of the sky. When the bird's need or the fish's need is great, the range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird uses the whole space and vigorously acts in every place. However, if a bird departs from the sky or a fish leaves the water, it immediately dies. We should know that for a fish, water is life. For a bird, sky is life. A bird is life. A fish is life. Life is a bird. Life is a fish. Kodo Sawaki Roshi says the same thing very, very briefly and in his way, but he adds one other factor that I want to read to you. What he writes is, it's impossible for a fish to say, I've swum the whole ocean, or for a bird to say, I've flown the entire sky. But fish do swim the whole ocean and birds do fly the entire sky. He says both killifish and whales swim the whole ocean, river and ocean. But it isn't a matter of quantity, but quality. We work with our bodies within only 3 square feet, but we work the whole heaven and earth. And he's talking about Zazen. And this idea that it isn't a matter of quantity, but quality, I think is what Dogen was talking about also, that this intense living our life. So the Kanchi for today on this subject is called Given to a Zen Person, sort of like last week. I think people wrote to him and he wrote back, and sometimes with a poem. And the poem is, clouds disappearing in the blue sky, a crane's mind at ease, waves constant on the ancient shore, a fish swims slowly. Who can focus their eyes on this vague edge? From the 100-foot pole, take another step. And I'm picturing Dogen standing on a rocky coastal cliff facing the Japan Sea, which I think was near Eheiji. And clouds are disappearing and the whole sky is blue and only one white crane is flying over the coast that seems as if it's been there since ancient times without any change. And waves break and retreat and break and retreat. and a fish is slowly swimming beneath them. The sky and the ocean are entirely blue, and only the crane and the waves breaking at the foot of the cliff are white. It's a very nice scene. So in one of his Shogo Genzo fascicles called Zazenshin, he quoted a poem by Hongju Yungjue entitled Zazenshin, and composed his own poem with the same title. And at the end of his poem, Hongju wrote, "The water is clear to the bottom, a fish is swimming slowly. The sky is infinitely vast, and a bird is flying far away." And the final part of Dogen's Zazenshin is, "The water is clear to the earth, a fish is swimming like a fish. The sky is vast and extends to the heavens, a bird is flying like a bird." So it's clear that the motif in the first two lines of the poem to a Zen person derived from these other poems on Zazen. That's the point. They're a depiction of the scenery of our Zazen. And in his comments on Hongju's Zazenshin, Dogen says that the water in which the fish swims is not the water in the external world. The water has no boundary, no bank or shore. A fish is swimming, but we cannot measure how far it is moving because there is no bank from which we can survey it. The sky in which the bird is flying is not the space suspended in the firmament. The sky is never concealed nor revealed, and it has neither outside nor inside. When the bird is flying through the sky, it is flying the entire universe. When the bird is flying, the entire sky is also flying. In Zazen, even though we are simply sitting immovably right here, right now, we are flying or swimming together with the entire universe. In this flying and swimming, there is no goal, no purpose, no task. And likewise, the crane's mind is at ease and the fish swims slowly in a relaxed manner. So that's basically the understanding of the first two lines in this kanji. And the third line, this vague edge, who can focus their eyes on this vague edge, refers to the boundary between the fish and the ocean, and between the bird in the sky and the ocean in the sky. We see a boundary, but it's not clear. And actually, there isn't such a boundary. And all beings in the entire universe are living together with others at the intersection of oneness and multiplicity in the network of interdependent origination. And even when we die, we don't leave this network. So it's like, I was reading somewhere, I can't remember where it was. One way to look at it is that there's an amount, there's a certain amount of life in the universe, and it's all interconnected, and it changes up constantly, but it's always the same amount, and that we're just mixing up and changing up constantly in the same mix. I've read that somewhere. It's a kind of, I don't know, for me, it was a little bit jarring statement, but Dogen is saying this vague edge, like it is a vague edge, like who are we in this vague mix of interconnectedness? So then comes the last line, and this is the real essence of the kanji. From the 100-foot pole, take another step. And that's from a koan story called Advancing a Step. And I'm going to read this a little bit, but then I'll explain what this is about. So the koan is a man sitting atop a 100-foot pole. Though he has gained entry, this is not yet real. Atop the 100-foot pole, he should step forward. Then the universe in all directions is the whole body of this person. And this again has resonance with a Dharma discourse of Dogen's teacher, Ruijing, on the occasion of his administrators either stepping up or stepping down and ending a term of office. And it usually at a monastery, administrators, I know at Zen Center, we had like a 3-year general time frame of someone to hold an office, and then then everything switched around so that people didn't get too identified with their job and having a clinging response to, oh, that, you know, I'm the treasurer, I'm the financial executive of this organization. So Ruijing's discourse was raising his whisk. Ruijing said, "This is the top of the 100-foot pole. Advance one step and there is form. Withdraw one step and there is no trace. Advancing or withdrawing, everything functions in accordance with change. Vertical or horizontal, you wield the ancestral style." And again, he raised his whisk and said, "And tell me, how is it? Everything is grasped in the palm of South Mountain." So the 100-foot pole is the self. The 100-foot pole was the self. At the top, we take a forward or backward step. If we stood still, we'd teeter and fall. It means there's no place to rest. It also means that even if we die, we are grasped in the palm of South Mountain. We aren't going anywhere. Zazen is a backward step, but then we need to go forward and do things to move our life toward greater balance and centeredness. And so this point of change is the top of the 100-foot pole, where we freely take another step, but we don't always know beforehand where we're going. We humans, because of our karmic consciousness, that eighth level of consciousness, the Alaya, we tend to get ourselves stuck. And we know that this is often the case. We know that what we're doing isn't right, but we don't know. We can't get ourselves out of it. And that is the take another step moment. We advance one step and deal with what happens, and then we advance one step and deal with what happens. The pole of our self is our self, and the step is away from self-clinging. That's the step. So there's a pole, and we take another step away from self-clinging. And Zazen is also away from self-clinging. It's the other direction, but it's also away from self-clinging. To see the emptiness of all being is to feel free from self-clinging and to vow to live harmoniously with all beings and so forth. That's called dropping off body and mind. And to do so, we need to take one more step off the 100-foot pole and keep taking one more step to address our entrenched self-absorption. I learned something about the way Dogen thinks from a mistaken idea I had about the way he thinks. This was about his expression, one continuous mistake, which, because I took that to mean that human beings kind of bumble through the world and make many mistakes, and that Dogen's expression, one continuous mistake, sort of normalized that. So I entitled my manual for writers, One Continuous Mistake, Four Noble Truths for Writers, because writing is all about mistake making. And I thought that was appropriate. But having studied Dogen more carefully, I realized that when he says life is one continuous mistake, he's referring to what we call the three poisons, greed, hate, and delusion. And those three poisons are what keep us migrating through suffering lifetime after suffering lifetime. We've talked about that. But since a large percentage of our actions come from one of those three, Dogen says our life is one continuous mistake. We're always, so it's not like we said the wrong thing at the party last night. It's like every action and many thoughts from a spiritual standpoint are poisonous. When don't we make a mistake? So it's because of self-clinging that our entire lifetime may be, as he says, one continuous mistake. So my idea of what Dogen meant by that phrase, that, you know, we just kind of bumble through life and make mistakes, that's not what he meant. He meant on a much deeper level that we're making greed, hate, or anger, and delusion. The delusion is thinking that we exist as an independent individual, inherently independent individual. That's delusion. So on this level, one continuous mistake is kind of describing how it is to be us floating through our life. And applying this to this 100-foot pole idea, I was going to say, my first understanding, I was going to say, so we should take a step off the 100-foot pole maybe a couple of times in our lifetime. But now I realize it's like every breath. That's an exaggeration. But, you know, if you go a morning without checking if you've taken a step off the pole of self-clinging, you've probably not taken a step. So this is a really serious matter. And Zazen is checking. Zazen is a form of checking. It does it for us. But during Zazen, we have to keep checking about our posture and our breath. Our posture can disintegrate quickly. I know for myself, I have to check my posture. 5 minutes is too long. Within 5 minutes, the refinement of my posture disintegrates. So it's like a constant thing. But what does checking look like at other times of the day? And I think it's like paying very close attention to whatever we're doing. And with that activity, to engage to the utmost, like a fish swimming. I think that's why Dogen picked a bird flying. It's using its whole body. It's flying and using its whole body. And the space that it's flying in is his whole life. That's the entire universe for that bird at that moment, and the same with a fish. And our activities should be like that. It's like utter full-on living our life. But unfortunately, because of our self-clinging, we find ways to avoid entering our lives fully. We multitask, or we pay attention. We're doing something and we're listening to something else, or we're looking at our cell phone, or we're doing all kinds of things. And we are good at making excuses. And this is how we don't take a step off the 100-foot pole. We cling to ourselves. But we need to stop. This is the caution from Dogen Zenji to a Zen person like us. And this is the one main point of the talk today. Taking another step off the 100-foot pole, the self. It's a big one. It's really a big one. I want to read you two other kanji by Dogen, which make him so much more real and relate-to-able. And both of them are from a mountain retreat that he took. And the first one, I'm kind of amazed, he renounced writing and literature and writing. And it sort of reminded me of like, what is it called? Lent in Christianity, where you take something that you are attached to, that you really love, and you voluntarily abstain from doing that thing for a certain amount of time. So the first verse in A Mountain Retreat, Dogen writes, "For so long here, without worldly attachments, I have renounced literature and writing. I may be a monk in a mountain temple, yet still I am moved in seeing gorgeous blossoms scattered by the spring breeze and hearing the warbler's lovely song. Let others judge my meager efforts." And then another, I'll just read two of these, but another one is the same. It's very similar. I really like them. "Late in autumn, the days are cool and clear. In the dead of night, crickets are chirping. Under the crescent moon, the cacophony of sound echoing my mixed emotions. Here I sit, gazing up at the Big Dipper, slipping off to the east as daylight is about to break. And then here are three a kanji of my own. And the first is entitled Islam, Allah. I had them confused. Winter ends and my nap, I am sprawled like a drowsy hermit. Work a week away hovers over me like a toad. How's your sleep? I ask my mother. Huh? She says, freeze. Sleep, I scream. It began as a concern. And the next one is called The Bayou of Her. September's coast, wild, surly, though tender, in spots calm. I don't feel jilted, I tell myself, inhaling its familiar rawness. tied out, sand mangy, but combed in little ridges. I am alone. I feel intensely alone, listening to the shrieks of village children. And then the last one is entitled, Where is the Walrus? In my dream, birds grow hair, silken plates parading mountain wind. Sherpa's feet face north across the ridge. Will they wake me? This question on a flag? I pity the monk who makes the last round, tinkling his little bell. That last line is about like a Tassajara. The very last thing that happens is the person who sleeps in the zendo has the job of walking around the entire complex, ringing a sort of goodnight bell. And I'm saying I pity him because I'm already almost sound asleep in my bed, but he has all this other stuff he's got to do before going to bed. So here are some of the most important points from today's talk. There's six. First, when the bird's need or the fish's need is great, the range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird uses the whole space and vigorously acts in every place. And that's a message to us, how we need to live our life. And second, the 100-foot pole is the self. At the top, we take a step forward or backward. If we stood still, we would teeter and fall. It means there is no place to rest. It also means that even if we die, everything is grasped in the palm of South Mountain. We aren't going anywhere. And third, we see the boundary, but it is not clear, and actually there is no such definite boundary. All beings in the entire universe are living together with others at the intersection of oneness and multiplicity in the network of interdependent origination. Fourth, the sky in which the bird is flying is not the space suspended in the firmament. The sky is never concealed or revealed, and it has neither outside nor inside. When the bird is flying through the sky, it is flying the entire universe. When the bird is flying, the entire sky is also flying. And this is a really important point. It's kind of like mother and infant are one thing. Without a mother, there's no infant. And without an infant, there's no mother. And so birds and sky work the same way. And so do we with our life. We need to live that way. And fifth, so this means to remove self-clinging and self-attachment. To do so, we need to take one more step off the top of the 100-foot pole and keep taking one more step and more and one more step. We continuously are taking one more step to address our entrenched and long-term self-attachment. And then the last Kodo Sawaki statement about Zazen: this isn't a matter of quantity, but quality. We work with our bodies with only 3 square feet, our Zabutan, but we work the whole heaven and earth. So I have 4 ideas for reflection during the week. And this will be a break time also. So you'll have more time if you choose. The first one is regarding the teaching from the 100-foot pole, take another step. So the teaching in the practice is that there's no rest outside of a conscious rest practice, which you might have. But weaning ourselves away from self-clinging is really hard. And I wonder if you can name something that you've done with this in mind. And if not, if you can think of something that would be for you, and then experiment with doing it. And I was saying before that paying very close attention, extremely close attention to each thing that you do during the day is a way of working on this issue of self-clinging, because you join the activity and you become one with the activity. And the self, the body and mind are dropped off. And Zazen is another way where the body and mind can be dropped off. You may find other ways. And secondly, why do you think Dogen introduced the last line in his poem with 3 other lines about vague boundaries are the interdependent whole? Are Ruijing's words, everything is grasped in the palm of South Mountain? How does this idea that we're not going anywhere differ from what you've always thought about death and dying? Probably this isn't how you've thought. And I wonder how it differs from how you thought. And the third idea is Dogen's descriptions of birds flying and fish swimming. They're actually descriptions of Zazen. And we actually don't do Zazen. Zazen does Zazen, but we need to be present for it. And we need to continually refresh our Zazen practice and our Zazen posture to have a more balanced part, to have it both be more balanced in the moment of doing Zazen, and also our Zazen practice being more balanced in our everyday life practice, so that we do enough but not too much, and that can change, and we need to be conscious about our Zazen practice vis-a-vis our life. And so if you haven't done that recently, can you imagine what you might do in an effort in that direction of balancing your Zazen practice and your everyday life? What would be your next step? And then finally, we've had many examples of Kanchi in this series, and I wonder if you could try writing some of your own. And typically they'd have between 4 and they can have as many as 8 lines. And I'm going to post on this these ideas for reflection that get posted, I'm going to post one of my own kanji so that you can study it for rhythm. And the one I'm going to post, I think I've read this a few times ago, knowing that friends are coming, I use my foot to clean around the wicker gate. And that poem is, why complain of loneliness and seclusion when a hermit's life is what you seek? Sparrows frolic, roosters crow, so what? To be a tribe of a mountain, to be one of a tribe of mountain birds floating by a cliff, you needn't be a mountain bird. So that was that's my kanji, and I read it a couple of sessions ago. And I'm going to post that so you can look at it for the rhythms of it. And you can mimic those rhythms or do rhythmically. Kanjis usually have similar rhythmic structure. So once you get that down, you could try writing. You could start loving writing your own kanji. Frankly, they're really fun to write. So that's the fourth suggestion for your week, or more than a week over the break. I wonder if you have any questions.
Yes, Gail. So the first question that we got was, did you ever have the bell ringing job? If so, how was it for you?
Yes, I did. What is it called? I'm spacing out on the job title, Jikido. It's called Jikido, and the job includes, and everybody, it circles through all the students. Everybody is assigned Jikido at some point, and often during a practice period, you can have it twice even, depending on how many students. And the job is cleaning the zendo, having it be spotless, and cleaning the altars, and changing the kerosene in the lamps, and also ringing the wake-up bell. So you are all around the clanging. I think I've read you poems or if anyway parts of something clang, clang, clang. And I was referring to this very loud bell that the Jikido runs through the entire camp, waking everybody up at some ungodly hour. And then also the last thing at night, having to walk through the entire camp, I think turning out the lights on the path. And then sleeping in the zendo. I might have all the details wrong, but anyway, yes, I did. I did, as everybody has that job at least once, and usually more than once. And you know, I've told you about my attitude. So I hated everything and I hated that because it was cold and I got even less sleep and I already got way too much little sleep. And anyway, all my complaints. I'm so sorry that that's who I was. Thank you.
So the second one we have is, you said without a child, there is no mother. And without a mother, there is no child. Could you explain how that connects with today's message?
Yes. That's so the very first sentence I said today is that, you know, as we all know by now, there's the one and the many. And the today's message was about the many individuals that are a self. So there's the one, which is this interconnected mix that's our actual reality, but it's a ultimate truth. So we can't actually grasp that entirely with our thinking mind. It's beyond our thinking mind, that ultimate truth of our serious interconnectedness. And so the mother and the baby, you could almost say it's both, but it's the baby, the infant cannot exist without the mother. And the mother isn't a mother without a baby. She might be a woman, but she's not a mother without the baby. And so that's this kind of full immersion in your life. That's full. That period of time is full immersion in your life, and that's one of the best ways of taking ourselves off that clinging to the self, because we're not thinking of ourselves. We're thinking of, oh my God, my child's crying right now and I don't know why, what should I do? Like, try this, try that. And you figure it out somehow. And then it goes on like that. So it's that full on engagement with every single moment, like a bird flying through the sky. And that portion of the sky is the bird. And Dogen says, and I kind of understand this, the sky is also flying because the bird and the sky are the same thing. When the bird flies 100%, the sky is also flying 100%. And that's how our lives go also, if we live it this according to this teaching. I hope that explains it.
Thank you, Gail. The next one we have is, I understand that the 100-foot pole is a metaphor, but I'm still not sure I understand. If you stand still, you fall and die. If you take a step forward, you fall and die. Is the taking a step action the whole point, even though you die either way?
I think the teaching is taking a step backward is doing zazen. And you actually, that's a form of ultimate living, actually. That's if you're in zazen and taking good care of your zazen posture, that's pretty ultimate living. And then taking a step off is also ultimate living. Even though you don't know where you're going, you're engaged. You're taking risks. You're engaged with your life in 100%. I think that rock climbers or mountain climbers have a situation like this, where every move they make, they're it's very risky, and so they're very engaged, and that's the level that is being suggested that we live on, that we're very engaged. Even though we don't know what's coming next, we still are very engaged and take the next step anyway, even if it's we don't know where. This part about everything is held in the palm of South Mountain, so that teaching doesn't mean we die. But should we die? In the teaching, it says, should we die? No worries, we're not going anywhere. The teaching is not, if you take a step backwards or forwards, you're going to die. It's about living fully, zazen, or full-on life. But if you mess up, you're just going to fall in the palm of South Mountain. And no problem. You'll just be back in the interconnected mix. That's kind of what the teaching says. I think you have it just a tiny bit wrong. I hope that explains it.
Thank you, Gail. The next one that we have is, you have talked about attachment and self-clinging before, but I'm not sure about two things. First, that I really understand what you mean. And second, about what to do about it. Like your example of one continuous mistake, I don't think I'm thinking in a large enough way.
This is a really critical point, and I'm so happy to talk about it. The best way, the reason it's critical is it's like how to live, you know, it's how to live with no waste of your precious time. And the simplest and most direct approach, frankly, and this is just me talking, someone else could say an entirely different thing, but when I really think about it, the most direct way to work on this issue is working on what's called the three poisons, greed, hate, and delusion, and hate/anger and delusion/ignorance. So greed, we all have that to some extent or another, and anger and hatred. And the delusion is, again, it's thinking of having an individual, inherent individual self. Working on those three, and those are the three things that, according to Soto Zen Buddhism, keep us continuously cycling and recycling through samsara. This was Shakyamuni Buddha's, Shakyamuni Buddha's enlightenment was about our interdependence. But no, so scratch that, this was not it. But still, the understanding in Buddhism is that these three, they're called poisons, are what keep us reincarnating and suffering again and again through lifetime after lifetime. And my suggestion is to watch those things in yourself. really carefully, like really carefully. So when you see yourself doing something that even subtly has a level of greed in it, notice it. Just notice, like, oh, I didn't really think of myself as a greedy person, but that action actually was greedy. Or, you know, we're all working on racism. And so to notice, which is basically hatred. And so to notice when you just notice, that's all. Just notice when that's part of your kind of either an action that you took or a thought that you had. And the same with ignorance. The same with ignorance is, don't forget, ignorance is the first of the 12 nidanas, are links in causation of lifetime after lifetime of suffering. Everything I'm saying boils down to notice your greed, hate, and delusion. Just start noticing it really carefully. And I think that's the fastest way to, or most direct way to work on self-clinging. Thank you. I think that's what I think. And again, someone else could say something altogether different. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So the next question that we got is, I know the place you're talking about where you know you can't stay. And at the same time, you don't know where to go. And you say jump, but how do you get the courage? You can't just jump into nowhere.
So if you're living this way that I'm talking about, 100% in, you don't know. You actually don't know what's going to happen. None of us know. So, for example, going to a practice period of usually, so the practice periods are, there's one that just ended at Green Gulch Farm that was 8 weeks. And they're very intense. There's a lot of Zazen, a really rigorous daily schedule. And there's no way to figure out how you're going to be beforehand. All you can do is take what they say to bring and then go. And you just show up. And there's no figuring out. And you just show up and you do your best. And that's the end of it. And that's kind of how life is. We don't get the courage. We just do it. We don't necessarily think it all the way through first. Because even if you think it all the way through first, you still won't know. So yesterday, I thought I was going to go to a one-day sesshin. And I was going to be driven by another student whom I actually haven't met, but we live in a way that it would be easy for her to pick me up. So that was all arranged. And I was going to meet her, just wait on the street while she drove by and hop in her car. That was the plan. And then I didn't check my email, unfortunately. And there I was waiting on the street. It was pouring rain. And I had all my Zafu and all my stuff. And there I am, just waiting and waiting. And she's not coming. And so I call her and find out that she really had tried to reach me. So it is all my fault for not checking. And her son got sick and she needed to take care of him. And so she wasn't able to come. And meanwhile, a tree fell. It was raining so hard, a tree fell near the exit, the freeway exit that leads to where the session was. And so everybody was like having to wait for the tree to get taken away so they could arrive. Go figure. So I, you know, there I was in the rain, all bags packed, ready to go. And then the whole day was different from what I thought. And for her too, with her son, I hope her son is well. And then for everybody else who hadn't yet gotten past the place where the tree fell, we're just sitting there waiting for the tree to get tugged away. We can't know. And I don't think it's about courage. I think it's about just doing, just being willing to step off the step. It's about not self-clinging. It's about not self-clinging. I'm seeing from the questions that maybe this concept is difficult. And maybe we can return to it another time because it's very important. I'm sorry if I didn't explain it well enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So we are left with 3 minutes. Should I go ahead and ask you another question or not?
You know, you better not, because I have a couple of things to say.
Okay.
The first is that I want to say that this is the last, as you know, this is the last in this series, and I plan to start another series in January on the 15th, and I'm not sure how many sessions it will be, something around 10, and the week before, there'll be a registration week where you can register for that next series. And so there'll be about a month's break. And I just wanted you to know, I just wanted to orient you to the break and to the next series. And then I also want to be sure to thank everybody, not only my team, Brendan and Sahar and Brian, but also those of you who are here listening. You know, again, it's the same. It's without listeners, there's no speaker. Because if you weren't listening, there'd be no point in me talking. So it goes both ways. And so I thank you for being here listening. And I thank also those of you who aren't here listening now, but who do, you know, religiously follow these teachings on your own at a different time. I want to thank you also. So goodbye for now.